ですね。
God, please set aside what I think I know about cocaine, about my addiction, about these steps, about this book, about this conference, and especially about You, God, so that I may have an open mind and a new experience with all of these things. Hey, y'all, I'm Scott Jackson. I'm a recovered addict. You know, you got to know, if you're sitting in here tonight, you got to know there's a powerful God that we serve, because you can't put this many dope fiends in a room and get this much fried chicken eaten at one time, man, because we don't eat, right? Yeah, that's right. We eat good now, but it took God for that to happen, right? And that's what happens here. We get hooked up in here. You know, we get hooked up with power as a result of what we do here. And that power enables us to create this type of event, this type of fellowship, and these type of friendships, and this type of family. And it happens as a result of the complete surrender that happens in step one. Everything will happen from that. Buster, I want to thank you so much for bringing me up here tonight, giving me an opportunity to talk. Tarek, thank you for whatever parts you put into it. And thank you, everybody, for putting this thing on and for being here. It's an honor to be here. I haven't spoken in about a year. I took a year off from talking to do another body of work, and I just had a need to be silent. So this is my first time speaking since about this time last year. So we'll see what happens. I come from a... first, let me give you a disclaimer. I'm going to tell you about my experience, all right? I got asked to come up here and talk. So I'm going to tell you about what I do, a little bit about what happened to me, but what happened to me is what happened to you more than likely, so I don't got a whole lot to say about that. But I'm going to talk to you about what I do today, what my experience has been since I came into the rooms, because it's the most important experience. The most important experience for me is what has happened as a result of me finding the God of my understanding and beginning to build and nurture that relationship in this body of work, in this fellowship of people, and doing this deal. So that's what I'm going to talk about. If what I talk about causes you any offense, or there's any resistance to it, or you don't like it, it's not personal. I don't mean it in that way. Okay, I'm here to share about what I do in here and how incredible my life has become as a result of completely giving myself to this simple program. Okay. So, I come from a lineage of guys, and my sponsor today is a guy named Mike Dolphin. He's out on the West Coast now. He just left Austin, Texas, and moved to Los Angeles, and he's a member of CA and an incredible one. My sponsor before him was a guy named Mark Houston, who passed away in February of this year. God bless him. And he was about five generations away from Dr. Bob and AA. Now, Mark was also a member of CA as well. So we had a pretty pure message that comes down through our family tree or through our sponsorship lineage. And we are guys who, so I think Buster used the word warrior a minute ago. That's what we are, because we're aware of what we've got. We're aware that we have an illness of the spirit that will manifest in various forms over time, and ultimately it's all about taking us back out there into that street to do a hit of cocaine. So we don't play around, because we're real clear on what we got, we're real clear on where we came from, and we're real clear on what we have to do to stay free of what's out there. You know, it's interesting, I was driving up the street a minute ago, and it came to me, because I used to run right here on these streets, man, and run a lot. For years, I was right here. You know, I turned this corner right here more times than I could count with a pipe in my mouth looking in my mirrors, because I knew somebody was after me. And this God that I serve got me standing up here tonight talking to y'all about freedom. Right? How cool is that? That is cool, right? Yeah. So I was driving down the street a minute ago, and I know we got some guys in here. Most of us in here have a good bit of us, and I know some of you have been in here for a while and have gone back out. There's a reason that happens. And it's funny. I was driving up. You know, I can drive up and down Ponce now, and I'm free. Right? And I used to not be. That's for sure. And I was a slave out here, man. And I shouldn't be alive. You know, but I am. But I drove by the Ponce Hotel. Some of y'all might know where it is, about five blocks down the road. And it brought back a memory. And I'll tell y'all what happens to me when I take a drink and then when I take a hit of cocaine, where I go. And what happens to me before that if I've made a decision to stop and to stay stopped. All right? I think back in 2002, I came in and out over the years. I'd get 30 or 45 days, something like that. The internal condition would become so intolerable. You know how it is when you come in here, man, and you're new. You get about 10, 15 days, you start feeling a little better. About 30 days, you're like, damn, I got this thing. Then all of a sudden, about 45 days, it's like a Mack truck runs into you. You know, because the problem ain't the dope, right? The problem's the internal condition. The dope is the solution to the internal condition. So at about 45 days or so, what happens is inside of me, I get so jacked up that the only thing I can do, and I have no choice in doing it, is I go take another hit of dope, right? So I've got about, I had 38 days that time, and I walked into a, I went to see a show downtown, and I was just nuts, man. I'd come in here, I wouldn't get into the steps, I would just come to meetings, I would take no action whatsoever, right? And that's a recipe for a real addict to go back out the door, you know, because sitting in these rooms, I will not get clean and sober through osmosis if I'm the real McCoy. I'm going to have to take some action. So 38 days, I put myself in an environment that was not best for me. I walk up to a bar. I ordered 6 double shots of whiskey. I hammer those down. I wake up 2 days later in the Ponce Hotel, and I done things to myself that some of y'all know exactly what I've done to myself in that time, right? And I don't have any choice in it whatsoever. And let me tell you, when I came in to the rooms that time, I absolutely, with all my heart, wanted to be clean and sober. But at 38 days, I couldn't hold it anymore. I could not stand what was going on inside. So although I've made a firm decision with all of my mind and all of my heart to not do any more dope, without a spiritual experience, I do more dope every time. So I go back out, and I stay out there for another 9 months or so, and then I came in here. And when I finally, when it happened, on April 9th, 2003, the power of God separated me from a crack pipe, from a needle, and from a bottle of whiskey for the last time. And I didn't choose it. Real addicts don't choose to get clean. Okay? Real addicts get beat down into a place of complete surrender. Okay? When that happens, the miracle of step one occurs. Right? So I woke up that morning, a voice in my head said, there's a meeting at 5, it was 5:23, a voice in my head said, there's a meeting at 6 o'clock. I said, shut up. I don't want to hear you. Voice in my head said again, there's a meeting, louder, right? 6 o'clock. Next thing I knew, I rolled out of bed. And I don't remember anything. I pulled on some more dirty clothes. I pull up in front of the meeting, and I'm at a meeting. The next thing I know, some guy's giving me a white chip. And then the next thing I know is 6 days later, I come to in a meeting. I don't remember any of that time. And there's a moment of clarity. It says, the voice says again, this is the next thing I hear, you have no idea how to live and you are going to die. Right? And I stood right up in the middle of that meeting and I walked over to a man and I said, will you please help me? I have no idea. I repeated what the voice said. I said, I have no idea how to live and I'm going to die. And this guy said, yes, I will help you. And he grabbed a hold of me. And some other guys grabbed a hold of me. And from that day to this day, I've been willing to do absolutely anything I have to do, never to be back out there again. Right? Now, here's the interesting thing, is that when that happens in us, when that... See, the book says that we had to admit to our innermost self complete defeat. Right? The first step is nothing anybody can take from me. It's nothing you can talk me into. And there's nothing you can scare me into with your war stories of how bad it was for you out there. Okay? Because if what I've gone through out there is not bad enough for me to want to get sober, then what you tell me about what you've done is definitely not bad enough for me to get sober. Right? So it's going to have to happen on an internal level. And when it does, it's like the heavens will open up for us, man. Because there's this thing in me that says I absolutely have to run every area of my life, and I absolutely have to run everything that I do, right? I've got everything under control, no matter how crazy it might look, and I've got this whole drug usage thing down too. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to beat it. I'm going to get it. One day, I'm going to turn it all around, right? Who's had those thoughts, right? You done burned everything you got to the ground. You done got rabbit ears hanging out of your pockets. You got nothing left, man. But one day I'm going to turn it around. Right? I mean, and that's where we get. So there has to be that surrender inside. And when that happened, I became willing to do whatever I'd have to do. Now, the reason that, people like us who have that experience, who get connected, because that's a step one experience. Understand, that's when it happens, right? And the reason that people like us go back out and use dope again is one of two reasons. Either we're never connected to step one, or we lose our connection to step one. The way I live my life today will look what my connection to step one looks like, right? So if I'm connected to the fact that I'm going to drink whiskey and do dope no matter what, and I never have, nor will I ever have the power to choose not to drink or do dope again, okay, if I'm connected to that, then I'm always going to remain willing to do everything I have to do in here to stay free from that, because I'm never given choice. See, there's people in here that say, I woke up today and I chose not to do dope. I say, well, good for you. Because you're not of my ilk. If you can wake up today and choose not to do dope, then you don't need God. You don't need this power. You don't need these steps. Because we're told clearly that we never, ever recover control. It does not happen. We have lost the ability to control and enjoy our using. Whoever controlled using crack in the first place, right? Some controlled crack smoking. It's funny. But I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what I do. I go back through to work. Fortunately, I got lined up at about 2.5 years clean, man. I was crazy as a bed bug. I was sitting on unfinished amends, and I wasn't nearly out in a hurry to do them, right? Because I'd lost some connection to step one, because ninth step's about first step, and so is everything else. But I went pretty nuts in the rooms, and my life was just a disaster. And in that surrender of that current disaster, what happened was I was led to a guy down in Forest Park who ultimately led me to Mark Houston, who was out in Texas. And what Mark taught me was that for him, and it ended up being paralleling for me, is that one time through the work, going through 1 through 9 once and living in 10, 11, and 12, the rest of my life was going to be inadequate for a guy like me. Because see, that surrender that happens at step one, that place where the ego is absolutely deflated, that goes away, right? We start to get our money back, we start to get a girl back or a guy back, we get all the stuff back, and then the desperation that showed up when we lost all the stuff is not there anymore. And what we call that is resurgence of the ego. Resurgence of the thing that is going to separate me from God long enough to get me to put another pipe in my mouth or a needle in my vein. And trust me, man, it's always knocking, right? It's always knocking. And it will look, I'll be able to see if it's knocking based on the way my life looks, right? So, and I'll get to that. So what happened was, I was taught how to go back into the work at a distance away from my last drink and hit a dope, and actually have a current experience with step one, and that current experience with step one will thrust me into step two, and so on and so forth. See, the steps are designed, and remember, they're divinely inspired, so they're divinely designed to thrust me into the next step. If I'm balking at a step, and it's because something's missing in the step that I've just done some work in. And that's a fact, man. I've got enough experience doing this work to know that when I'm balking at step four, my decision in three ain't firm, right? So, and that's just the way it is. So we go, me and the guys I work with, all the people I work with, and I'm blessed to work with a lot of people, man. It's a good life. We go back through the work over and over again. We commit to this body of work a minimum of once a year. And we'll start back at step one, and we'll go all the way through. And understand, the reason we do it, we don't do it because CA is not a self-help program. Okay? This is not about getting all my stuff back. That's one of the benefits. This is about God, and this is about me getting a relationship with God, because I'm powerless over cocaine, and my life has become unmanageable. So I need to get some power in my life, so cocaine's gone, and I need to get some manageability in my life, and it's going to take God to do that because I can't manage it for shit on my own power. So we get connected back to the truth in the first half of step one, which is that I'm powerless over cocaine. And we do that by looking, you know, there's 53 pages in the big book that tell us about step one, right? You got 100 pages where the whole thing happens. Well, 53 of them are devoted to the first step. So that tells us something about the seriousness of the step. So, but hyphen, and my life has become unmanageable, so that tells me second thought. So what we really look at, once we get past getting connected to the powerlessness over cocaine again, which we do, what we look at then is page 52. It says, it says I'm having trouble in personal relationships. I'm a prey to misery and depression. I can't seem to be of real help to other people. I have feelings of uselessness. I'm unhappy. I'm full of fear. See, there's some of us in here right now, I bet, that have been here for a while that have got some of those things going on in their life. Right? Now, that if you knew, you definitely got some of that going on in your life, and that's okay. We got a solution for that. But if you've been here for a while and you've done a body of work, and maybe you don't got all your ninth step amends finished, or maybe you're not working with 10 and 11. Maybe you're not really in the game. You're just going to meetings. If you're a real addict, more than likely, you got some of that stuff on page 52 showing up. Now, understand, that's when I talked about cocaine knocking. That's what's knocking. When that stuff's showing up, it's knocking, right? Because this deal in me is going to do everything it can to separate me from you, from myself, and from God long enough so that it gets another hit of dope. And it's going to do it in whatever way it wants, right? I mean, we look at the stories in the big book. We got a couple of them. One guy goes because he's pissed off because somebody owns his old business and he's mad because the boss jumped his ass about something. So he goes out. Jim, you know the story about Jim in the big book. So he's got a resentment. He's mad and he goes out and drinks some whiskey, right? Then Fred, it's the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. And Fred drinks whiskey too, right? And both of them know they're going to the asylum if they drink whiskey. So that's how hopeless we are, because we all got that going on. So when this stuff's happening on page 52, that's what that's about. Now, when I come through this work, I look at that. I ask those questions. Am I having trouble in personal relationships? How does my work life look? You know? How does my relationship look? How do my friendships look? How do people I sponsor look? How's the relationship with my mom and dad look? You know? How does this stuff look? Am I trying to manage these people? Am I fighting with these people? Am I arguing with these people? Right? Because that's trouble in personal relationships. And here's the deal. If my relationship with God is right, which is internal, everything out here will be fine. If I got a bunch of drama going on out here, then my relationship in here is tainted. That's a fact. Because what's going on out here is a reflection of my connection to Spirit. It's just a fact. Now remember, the spiritual malady is not specific just to alkies and addicts. Spiritual malady exists in all kinds of human beings. Fact is, our shit manifests in a way that kills us graveyard dead. Dead is that delicious fried chicken we just ate. So we got to get some power so we don't end up like that, right? Thank God we know what the problem is. Right? So, when I see all that stuff there on the page, man, it thrusts me immediately into something's wrong with what's going on with my relation with God. That's obvious. I'm moving to the second step. And when I move into the second step, we go back into it and we dig. We look at what step two looks like. You know, I'll come to believe I come from step one into step two, right? And I will see, if I've got all this unmanageability, why is it that I've got, what's wrong with my relationship with God? What is it that I'm really thinking about God that would show up in my life in all this unmanageability? Right? Because unmanageability in my life is about self-reliance. If I'm God-reliant, the unmanageability goes away. So it's about my self-reliance. It's really that simple. So when I look at step two, I'll work on the idea that possibly my old conception of God is not working for me. Maybe we need to change this conception of God a little bit. Maybe I need to expand how I feel and view my God, right? And I'll do that in direct correlation to what shows up in my unmanageability. But here's a You know, we all, part of getting sober, part of getting clean is it's a process. We trade the dope. See, the first thing, sobriety is a never-ending series of surrenders, right? The first surrender of which is the surrender to the cocaine, the surrender to the whiskey or whatever it is. Then it's going to be maybe to money, or maybe it's going to be to my physical health, to the insanity in relationships or sex or both. You know, all kinds of stuff shows up. Gambling. There's all kind of other stuff that pops up for us, right? And that's okay. And if that's your truth, then you're right at home. You're in the right place, because we got a lot of that. It's not to be judged. We just observe it. But there's going to be more and more surrenders that come. And without those surrenders, they're going to be the thing that will take me back to a hit of dope. Because once I get it in me, I'm bad. See, the book says selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of my troubles. It also says that selfishness will kill me. And I must be rid of this selfishness, and I cannot do it without God's help. It doesn't say just that cocaine is going to kill me. It says selfishness is going to kill me. And that's going to show up in all kinds of ways, right? A lot of it's about the way we treat our body. Here's what it says. So when I'm looking out here and all these other things for God, it'll never be there. Because here's where God is. It says, actually, we're fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things. See, calamity, pomp, and worship of other things. You ever ask yourself that question? What do I worship? Do that exercise. Say, what things do I worship today? Do I worship her? Do I worship him? You know? Do I worship the money? Worship the job? Worship the bling? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's all kind of stuff we might be worshiping. So that will obscure our connection to God. Because faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup. Just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but He was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality that's capitalized. We found God. The great reality. Deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that He may be found. It is so with us. See, that's talking about step one, right? Step one's last analysis. Step one's when everything else is done. When I got no more power. Only in that place will a real addict turn to power, which is inside. And that's the key. And if you can't stay sober, you can't stay clean, then something's not happening there that will turn you into that power. There's something that's not occurring to create that last analysis. You know, and maybe we're relying on too many things out here to give us what only that which is in here can give us. Second step will, of course, lead me into third step. Now, third step is a great thing because it says I make a decision here, right? We make a decision. It says here I'm hereafter in this drama of life, God's going to be the director. Because we just realize that I've been the director all my life and it's failed miserably. It's failed drunk or sober, right? It's failed in everything that I do. So I make a decision, right? That hereafter God's going to be my director again, right? And then I affirm that decision with a prayer, and I use the third step prayer again from the book. And it's an affirmation of my decision that God's going to be the director. He's going to be the father. I'm going to be the child. He's going to be the principal and I'm going to be the agent. And I love being known. I love knowing. Don't you love knowing you're an agent for God? One empowered to do the work of God. That's what happens here, right? We get empowered to do work. What were we empowered to do before? Now here's the deal. Something happens. You know, I fell victim to a belief that I would be okay in 1 through 9 once and that I could live strongly enough in 10, 11, and 12, right? And it didn't work out because somehow I miss little resentments get by me. Little stuff gets by me, right? Throughout the course of a day. And they start building on some level that I can't see inside. So when I commit back to this work, when I come out of that third step and I go into my fourth step again, I start writing and all of a sudden all these names come off the paper, right? And the book says that resentment is the number one offender. It kills more of us than anything else. So, and it doesn't say what degree of resentment does, it just says that resentment does. Right? So, and when I showed get up to the piece of paper and I got a whole bunch of resentments, you got to understand that all of that stuff is in the way of the thing that I need to absolutely maintain sobriety, the thing that I need to maintain freedom. And it's impossible for me to fix that with my mind. You know, and the crafty ego, which has rebuilt itself, will tell me, no, that ain't a resentment, man. That guy's just an asshole. It's all right. You know, that's probably a resentment. Put it to paper and see what happens. Right? Now, here's what fourth step. I'm in the current ninth step of men's in my eighth body of work. So I've done eight bodies of work, and that's almost as many years. And my fourth one, I did my first extended third column. You know, what that means is we before that, I didn't really know what was going on in resentment, and in my four-step inventory with resentments. And I can say that because I had such an incredible contrast between doing checklist-style inventories to actually doing extended written third column. See, it opened my eyes. Right? It says, the world and its people really dominated me. Right? Write an extended third column, man, and be like, damn, they really dominate me. You know, I base everything in how I view myself, how you're supposed to view me, the ambitions of what I need in everything we do, the security I need in everything that we do, right? That stuff shows up. And when I write the extended third column, what comes out is ugly, but that's good, because that's going to carry me on to freedom. And until I started to see that, I had no idea what was really going on. I thought that the fourth step was about the fourth column. I thought the fourth step was about the harm I had caused. The reason I'm causing harm in the fourth column is because I'm so asleep that you're affecting all these areas of self so greatly in me. Right? That's third column. So I'm constantly, and this is why, because I think that I'm God and it shows up in my actions. I think that everybody's supposed to do what I think they're supposed to do. I think they're supposed to act in AA and CA the way that I say is best. I think my girlfriend's supposed to do what I think is best. I think my boss and my co-worker are supposed to do what I think is best. And you know, and won't none of them do it. And it pisses me off, right? Yeah. If everybody would just act right, everything would be perfect, right? Yeah. Traffic. I haven't been mad in traffic, man, in a couple of years. You used to have to watch out. I will shoot you in some traffic, man. I was crazy enough. That's sober, all right? Yeah. So we really see the truth about what's going on in the fourth step. And there's still... That actually dissolves a lot of stuff when I see that truth, you know, in column three. Because here's the key. If all of my troubles are of my own making, which they are, you're never my trouble. You know, you're not my trouble. No one's my trouble. All my troubles are of my own design. Right? Every one of them. So, if all my troubles are of my own making, what shows up in column two in the fourth step has to be a lie. So, column three and column four are going to have to turn the cause of the resentment into a lie. And I'm able to see that when I write this work. Every year, I see more and more of it. Right? I don't use much treatment center jargon because it's not really my thing, but there is that expression, peeling back layers of the onion. And it fits well if you continue to do this work, because we will continue to peel back more and more stuff. The ego becomes crafty because it doesn't want to die. So the way that it tries to run the show will become more subtle and nice. Right? The way that I try to get you to do what I need you to do will become slick. Right? Yeah. And the longer we're here, the more dangerous it gets, man. That's the deal. That's the deal. So, of course, I'm moving to fifth step then. Now, we read most of the time, me and the guys in my lineage, we read to multiple people in the lineage. The book says person or persons to hear the fifth step. So we tend to share it around with a bunch of guys that we're close to. I mean, we don't post it on Facebook or nothing, but we share it around with guys that we trust, because you know what happens. You know, sponsors die, sponsors get drunk, sponsors move away. You know, it's good to have a multitude of people in your network that know your truth, because then people can hold you accountable too. And we need some accountability, and it's good to have guys close to us to do that. I'm fortunate enough to have a good crew of them. Now, the sixth step and my current experience with Six Steps has been wonderful. The past few have been wonderful. But I tell you, in the beginning, what happens is I make a list. Now, the defects are shown up. They show up in my inventory, right? They're there. They show up in my fifth step. And there's a lot of them. But the key is, before we really move on to seventh step, is we must be ready to have that stuff removed. And I tell you, from my experience, if I'm not ready to have lust removed, if I'm not ready to have gluttony removed, I'm not ready to have these things removed, I will skip over that step and I'll say, oh yeah, I'm ready. Give me that pie. You know? Yeah, right? 1 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Give me two more chicken legs, right? Yeah. Yeah, so the thing is, now here's the key, man. Step six is really about becoming entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. So I sit with step six and I pray for willingness if I'm not willing until it comes. And that can be an arduous process. Right? But I do it because my life depends on it. And I sit with it until it comes. And my buddy Carl over here has got a great experience, man. He shares with me. I mean, body work he went through, when it came, it hit him like a ton of bricks. He fell to his knees and he prayed a seventh step. That's when you know you got a sixth step, right? When you feel it, man, it will fill you up, right? Seventh step, I humbly from my knees ask God to remove these defects of character. And then I let it go, because I don't know what God's going to take from me instead of the seventh step. And if I have the belief system that God's going to remove all of it, I'm probably going to be pissed off at God pretty shortly thereafter, because it probably ain't going to go away, not all of it. Because the cool part about it is that only that which gave me my self-will can remove my self-will from me, which is God. And God might need me to hang on to some of it, because I need some stuff. There's stuff I need to learn, or maybe people I need to teach. Okay? So when I do a seventh step, I know that my heart's in it completely, and then I move on. And whatever goes away, and that's awesome. Whatever stays is not as awesome, but it's okay. Because it's going to show up again, right? We're going to do some more work on it. The eighth step. And man, it's a trip. I come through this thing, let me back up the fourth step. I was talking to a guy recently. You know, in case y'all don't know, there's two pages in the book that talk about the sex inventory, but most of the people I know in CA and AA don't have anything to do with those two pages. Because nobody wants to have to actually straighten their shit up in sex, it seems like. You know, sex and checks is where the problems are, right? So, I was talking to a guy the other day, 25 years sober, and he's a big name in the recovery community around here, and I said, have you ever written a sex inventory from page 69? And done a sane, sound ideal from page 69, you could hear a pin drop over the phone, right? Nope. Damn. You know, that's a trip, man. I mean, it's right there. There are 9 questions right there that are crystal clear that show us how to inventory our sexual relationships, our he-in and she-in. And you can do it in any relationship. You can do it with your kids. You can do it with your mom and your daddy. Do any of it. Those 9 questions are incredible. And I tell you, if you really do it, take your heart into that piece of work, what will come out of it is amazing. And the reason, if we still got a bunch of drama in our relationships while sober, and trust me, I have a profound amount of experience with drama in relationships while sober, so I know what I'm talking about. It's because of my self-reliance and my inability to really ask God to help me live up to the ideal that I create in the fourth step, okay? So there comes another one of those surrenders, right? Then I finally go, all right, you got it. I'm done. You can have it. What do I have to do to live up to this ideal? Because it's been created out of this inventory. I just want to touch base on that, because it's phenomenal how many people in here don't do it. Just do not do it. You know? It's a trip. And the truth is, nothing counts when it's in the beginning of the fourth step. It says nothing counts but completeness or thoroughness and honesty, right? And we'll just skip right over that. Never mind that thoroughness and honesty. I got this sex thing handled. But remember, cocaine's knocking, right? It's going to knock with that too, right? Going to knock. Selfishness kills me. So, ninth step. And let me tell you, man, it's humbling going out here with some time sober and having to go make amends for causing people harm when I've been here a while, I'm in the game, I'm doing the work, and I'm still harming people because I'm still, in little areas of my life, I'm relying on myself and I'm trying to run the show. Right? But the miracle is that if I'm completely committed to this thing and to this game, God will take care of me through all of it. He will let me act a fool. He has. I know y'all find it hard to believe, but He has. He will take care of me through anything. Right? Let me tell you, man, I really don't understand or comprehend this power, because I've done just about everything in sobriety that would get most people drunk and high as hell, I think. That ain't no joke, man. I need to do the work a lot, trust me. Because I was a really bad guy before I got here. So I have to do the work a lot to get hooked up with what I need. But somehow, man, that complete surrender that happened keeps me in the game, right? You know, that first third step, evidently there was enough power in it to keep me connected. At times, even if it's just been by a hangnail, I've been here. But everybody ain't that fortunate, man. I've buried a lot of people. I don't know. I mean, who out here buried somebody since I've been here? Look at that. That's a lot of dead people, man. You know, from this thing. And every one of them people at one time probably thought, yep, I've had enough. I'm not going to do this anymore, right? They're still dead. So, now here's the deal. The tenth step, Mark used to say to me, he says, Scott, the tenth step is an abyss. It is a limitless place to be. Okay, it says it has no ceiling, no floor, no walls, right? The tenth step is an abyss. So, and I say, okay, sure, Mark, whatever you say. And because I had no idea what the hell he was talking about, really, because it's one of those things you got to have experience with, right? I've got to have some experience with that. But now the tenth step is a way for me to live recovery when I'm up and walking around. It's a way that I walk out of my door in the morning and I actually am going to live this thing in my life. I'm going to watch for resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, and fear, right? When they're going to crop up, because when these crop up, and they're going to crop up, right? They're going to. I'm going to ask God to help me remove them. I'm going to make amends if I've caused harm. I'm going to talk to somebody if I need to, right? I'm going to turn and help somebody, or at least turn out of myself into something else. Now, the reason that's an abyss is because the tenth step is about the now. It's about present moment awareness. It's about being right here, right now, in my body, not in next week, not in last month, about being right here, right? And that is where God is. Remember, our book says you must find God now, because that's the only place God is right now. God ain't tomorrow. God ain't yesterday. God's right here with us right now in this room in this moment. Right? I mean, that's the deal right there. And that's what the tenth step is. Right? For the ones of you that are mad at me right now and want to leave the room, see, God's not outside the room yet because you're still right here. It's right now. That's what the 10th step's about, right? Yeah. Continue to watch right now. What's going on inside me, right? Be the guardian inside. Become the guardian of my inner space. I start to guard what's happening inside of me, right? I become alert. I become present. Now, this happens because it says that we have been restored to sanity. Understand that it doesn't happen until this point. I begin to make amends. I begin to go out to people that I have harmed. Out of my effort to live life on my own will, out of my effort to get you to do what I need you to do, right? And I create a lot of wreckage doing that. So I go out and I start cleaning that up with you. And it's not just an apology. It's right. I go and I say, what can I do? I look you in your eyes and I say, what can I do to make right what I've done wrong to you? How do I make it right? And I do whatever I have to do that. And what happens then is sanity starts to arise, right? It starts to be restored. And the cool thing is at this point, I can drive down Ponce and Parkway don't call my name when I drive by it. And my truck don't turn in, because I swear that damn truck turned in so many times over there. And I said, truck don't turn in, and it turned in. You know what I'm saying, right? You know? And so sanity has been restored, and I get placed in a position of neutrality. That's what it says. It says, I've been placed in a position of neutrality. I'm safe and protected, right? By what? By God. By the God that I've begun to experience as a result of doing this work. Remember, I'm thrust from step to step to step to step because I'm willing to go to any lengths to get sobriety. And 10 steps, amazing stuff. And let me tell you, the better my 10th step has gotten, the better work I do with it, it's amazing what happens around me. It's amazing the nourishment of the relationships that I'm in. My work, let me tell you, I used to be difficult at work, man. They actually do stuff for me at work now. I mean, they're good to me. And there were some women in there. I came out of the field and I was a roughneck. And I came in the office and them women hated me, man, because I was rough and been working with construction workers for a long time. And I did not know how to talk to women in the office. And that has changed greatly. And now they go out of their way to help me, you know. But 10th step, 10th step, 10th step. Well, 9th step, then 10th step with them, right? And those things are so much better now. And the 11th step. You know, I heard Mark say one time to a group of people, it might have been 600-700 people in the room, he said, I want you to consider that if you're not working with meditation, you do not know God. And you heard people's breath went out of them. I mean, some of the people in that room was jacked up when he said that. You know, then I looked at what happened. I looked at my experience, pre-meditation, right? Post-meditation, right? Currently, I'm still doing meditation. But what has happened as a result of the meditative practices that I do in the 11th step is indescribable. There are not words here for it. But the 11th step is also an abyss. I worked for a long time doing the same prayers over and over, you know, and that finally quit working for me. It worked great for a while, but it gets dull, you know. I mean, anybody got experience with that? You do the same thing over and over for a year, for 18 months. It gets boring, right? I mean, man, we got mind shit. We're like, I mean, we're crack addicts, man. We got minds like this, man. We need something. We need some fresh stuff. You know what I mean? We need something new. Because our little mind's just getting it going. So, and the 11th step needs to look like that as well. I need to mix it up. For me, it works great. Different meditations, different visualizations, different spiritual communities. See, I can do anything I want in step 11 as long as it's done within the modality of the 12 steps, right? The problem with a lot of us is that we're real addicts and we'll get real hooked up in some spiritual arena. Let that spiritual arena pull us out of this place where we're supposed to be. And then we're back out in the dope trap, right? And the reason that happens, the book says it clearly. He says, keep your head in the clouds and your feet firmly planted on the ground. The way my feet stay firmly planted on the ground is by doing what Buster said when he introduced me. I work with alcoholics. I work with dope fiends. I hang out in meetings. I do this thing. That's my feet on the ground, right? And I keep my head in the clouds as much as I can through the spiritual disciplines of 10 and 11. And that keeps me hooked up. I got a buddy right now that's out there dying who got so deep into meditation and he was 4.5 years sober that he decided he didn't need to hang out in AA rooms anymore, didn't need to hang out working with drunks anymore. He was all hooked up. Then all of a sudden he pulls into a liquor store one day. You know, that truck took a right turn. He pulled in, bought a pint of vodka, and that's a year and a half ago and he can't stop drinking. Right? And this guy was a soldier, man, you know? But his head got too far in the clouds and his feet went with it. And that can happen to any one of us. Now, and here's the key. Here's the kicker. As a result of doing all that, I have a spiritual awakening. Right? I have a spiritual awakening. Now, what does that look like? I have an awakened spirit. My spirit is awakened. I'm energetic. I'm loving. I get along with people. I walk into meetings, people want what I got, right? You know that? You have people coming up to you, working with people. That's because I have an awakened spirit. That's as the result of taking these steps, right? Then as that result, I get to work with other people and I try to carry this message to them and to practice these principles in all my affairs. And then invariably, in that time, little stuff starts to grow. The resurgence of the ego happens and I start to cycle over. So that's why I know and I'm committed to this work at this level because it'll always be that way. I'll always have this stuff showing up, right? Self-will, part of our deal, and it's crafty. So thank God I know that I'm committed to this work from this day to the day I go away. And it is the baseline by which I know God. Mark said that to me when he said, Scott, the modality by which you and I know God is the 12 steps. Many people might use the church or various other things, but because of what our deal is, this is what we do. And that's great to know, right? I need to grind that into my consciousness, right? That this is what I do. And I stay in here with all my friends and all the people I love. And you know, and we hang out. In here we got two things, right? We've got immediate family and we've got kissing cousins. Right? You kiss your kissing cousin, right? But you hang out with your people, right? So it's fine. You can do whatever you want in CA. You can talk about your relationship. You can talk about your job. You can talk about all that stuff that don't have a damn thing to do with getting sober and clean. And that's fine with me, and I'll give you a little kiss on the cheek. And I'm cool with that, right? And I don't have any judgment of it or any of that anymore. But I hang out with the people that need power because they're my type, right? That's what I do. You know, Bob said, if I go after this thing with one half the zeal I went after a drink, I will not fail. My Heavenly Father will never let me down, right? Well, I go after it with more than one half the zeal. You know, I drank whiskey and smoked crack like a mad dog, right? I didn't do it like a chihuahua. So why would my recovery look like a chihuahua, right? It's going to look like a mad dog. It better, right? Because if it don't, I'm done. If you was a chihuahua out there, then you can be a chihuahua in here. But if you was a mad dog, you better hang out with your people, is what I'm saying, right? You better hang out with your people. Because we need you. We need the mad dogs in the trenches, man. Right? The trenches is where we hang out. And here's what happened. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. So there's the question. What's the central fact of your life today? Is it the fact that your Creator has entered into your heart in a way which is indeed miraculous? Or is it your bank account? Or your girlfriend or your relationship? Because if we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences, then the central fact is this. I got God in my heart, and I want to give some of it to you. I want to share it with you in every way. Right? And I want you to have some of it, because it's freely given, right? And it's freely received. I love y'all. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott. That was fantastic.